Right, here we go. So we just live welcome everybody. It's Dave and Harry, otherwise known as hashtag Finn and Firearms. It's probably the best way we can go about it, really. It's sort of just a bit of a chat. People are flooding in now. So we'll just give you a little bit of an introduction of what we were about. And apologies if you heard it before. But Dave and I were just having a chat every week. And we decided to just, because sometimes, you know, you've belly laughing, and we were talking about when people ask you questions which are pretty simple to answer for us, or people might think they're quite controversial, and generally we can answer them usually, and it may be I can answer them in a probably a more direct way than Dave sometimes, but to be honest, Dave, it doesn't interfere too much, does it? Being in the police and me being former police. So Dave is a dog handler at the moment. He's been a dog handler for a while, very successful, and he's had the Finn's Law side of things. And I'm a former police officer from about 3 weeks ago. And then just this week we thought, should we just try to get a guest in? I think, Dave, it was your idea. Your idea I just had, wasn't it?
Yeah. I worried, Harry, that you were getting bored of me. So,
just never, mate, never. So we're just getting together, and we thought, so Mike Pannett has got to be the obvious guy. Mike Pannett's going to be on in a few moments. And if you don't know, he's, again, a former police officer in the Met, former in North Yorkshire, and he's come to talk to us. Really, you'll see him on Twitter. If you don't already, follow Mike Pannett. He is really into the politics of policing, supporting policing, knowing where the weaknesses are. And if they're getting a bit of a media slapping, then we're more than happy. And Mike's more than happy to equal the odds a little bit, isn't it, mate?
Yeah.
So, Dave, what's been happening with you, mate?
What hasn't Mike done? Hopefully we'll get to hear some of his stories in a minute. I think there are probably too many stories to fill this time. So this week, oh, crikey, what we've been up to this week? Well, there's the Thin Blue Paw Foundation has been launched, which is a new thing that myself, Gemma, my wife, and a few other trustees who you'll get to hear about soon enough. It's a new foundation. It's to plug the gap. So there's about 14-ish charities that support retired police dogs when they've retired, because obviously the bills don't get picked up by the police anymore, they get picked up by their owners, like Finn. I have to pay bills now. And this really looks to step in for the other 26, 27, 28 forces that don't have any cover. And there's lots of other things that we're going to do. So that started. That's really exciting. The plans are amazing and absolutely huge. So that should be fun. And we hope to get you involved with that, Harry, as well. What else have we got? Then wasn't that busy on nights. It was great to see my good friend Carl and his new dog get some amazing results out on the street last set. So so it's all good. All been good this then. What about you, Harry? In retirement,
I know. I just keep thinking I've been really, really busy. And when you look back, you think, well, what have I been doing? I'll tell you what I have had, because I've always had a small business, and I've just sort of changed it to a little bit more with consultancy and that side of things. Had my first work come in as well. And that was part of consulting cops. And that's for writers. So it's quite an interesting thing. I wondered how much work there'd be. I've got my first one, and a writer needs to know the plot of of their book well. They want to get it accurate. And so they call someone like consulting cops for writers, and they look down their list of people to see who the most relevant are. So I've given him the advice on a cheerful subject about Red Death, one of the characters in there. And enter stage left.
Yes.
Let's just have a little hello with Finn, because nothing's going to carry on without that.
He's going to be antisocial, and he's got his ball. He's happy. Somebody was just saying, Where's Finn? We all know that Finn and Arthur are the most important characters in this show. So there you go. There's Finn. He'll sit next to me until he gets bored or someone else is doing something else more interesting, and then he'll disappear.
Just so sweet, so sweet. But okay, what's the time? We've got 133 people on, so welcome. It's lovely to have you. Oh, and what I did, in case people aren't actually able to watch this and just see what we're chatting about and whatever, we'll soon have the questions coming in and things. is just putting it on a podcast afterwards. So if you search, and it's Finn and Firearms, Finn and Firearms, search any of that there, and then you should be able to have the audio and just listen to it while you're doing other stuff or whatever. So that'd be good.
Any comments or any shout outs, then do put them in the comments, and Harry and I will do our best to.
Yes. Arthur, somebody's saying they've just said hello to Finn and things. Joy, thank you very much. Sorry for Arthur. Arthur is he's been eating grass again. Do you know, does Finn do that?
Yes, he does, yeah. Which is fine until they need a bit of help to get it out the other end when it doesn't quite work.
Then we'll start talking about dog poo because that's what dog anders do as old entertainment.
Yeah.
And but last time it was where the most inconvenient and inappropriate place the dog did poo. That was the subject there.
Got so many stories on that. I can fill a book.
But
so your book is called Firearms and Fatals, I suppose. Mine.
Yeah, you've got that. Yeah, thank you, mate.
Do you know how many copies of this book I've got now, Harry?
You've got three.
Three.
I know, your wife told me.
Harry wanted to make sure that I actually read his book, so he sent me three copies. Wonderfully signed, bless him.
Dave's looking for another Dave now. The trouble is they don't even count on the numbers because they're author's copies. No. But so it's been a hell of a week anyway. But yeah, I've been doing a little bit of accounts on that. I've done that little bit of consulting thing, which wasn't much. Looking at the podcast, that side of things. And I got a new toy, got a new TV, got to, now retired. New TV, soundbar.
What's that, like a 68-inch or something like
that? No, I didn't go for that. I didn't go for that, mate, because I thought 55 I've gone for, and that was a stretch with the wife saying, she's like, oh, no, it's too big, because that's how she talks. Oh, it's too big. And it looks good. It's good. I'm happy with that. The place is just full of boxes.
Michelle says, considering I spent 3 days in bed with you two, you could at least say hello.
There is a thing going on in there where my book has seen things. That face on the book has seen things and been places that could tell a story. I tell you, mate, couldn't it? But someone's been, so Hugh's Hut is a good one. I've just been sat looking at Town Beach, reading it, loving it. Thanks. Ah, that's John. That's my good buddy. That's good.
Finn's great friends with Lucy Rose, who was on Love Island last year, I think. And she lives in Newquay, and she overlooks Fistral, and she's often every day walks down.
And who's great friends? Finn.
Yeah, not me.
Yeah. I'm like...
Yeah, I said Lucy, didn't I? No, I said Lucy Rose. Sorry, I'm being told off by the Love Island expert, my eldest daughter, Lucy.
Well, it might be a guilty pleasure of mine with the old last year's Love Island and the year before. It is only because it was almost, I was walking through the lounge once, and then, now I'll tell you what it is, I get my laptop or something and I'm watching something or doing something else.
Yeah, you weren't.
And they're listening to it. And every time I look up for my book or something, they go, oh, I thought you weren't interested. And you're like, and then suddenly you do get into the characters and things, but this is not an advert for Love Island. I just want to do
with the bikinis either, is it? And we do have an interesting story about bikinis, which we won't go into today, don't we, Harry?
No, I just, Dave, you know me, I see them as people, and I'm more interested in their minds, okay?
Yeah.
That's okay. But no, Lucy's a good one, and her Instagram, I know that... She's very big on that. I just wanted to say thank you. First little bit of thing. I said I've got a friends with Pinnacle Photo Agency in near Exeter. They are, and they gave me a great little webcam, which is real crystal, so you can see the hairs on the nostril and everything. It's like, so because I said I've got a rubbish head.
Just what you need to see. So thanks for that. A couple of things. Someone suggested Colin Taylor. He's definitely on our list. He might not want to be on our list, but he's definitely on our list. We'd love to have him on.
Colin Taylor, he doesn't get a choice. He's coming on the list, for sure.
We'll stalk him until he says yes.
We do have two special guests as well, but we're not going to... Are we going to divulge them until later?
Maybe later. Right. I had an exciting delivery today. All to do with it. Some shout-out from our retired police dog, Seb, and Canine Chili. from Leslie. Hi.
Yay.
I guess it's about that time, really, isn't it?
So someone said my book could write a book because it's because of what it's seen. You're quite right. hi from the South Coast. Hi from the South Coast from RPD Seb and K9 Chili. Chili, that's a good name for a dog.
Yeah.
Massive followers. Because Finn was given Finn as a name, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he was from the sea litter. So his name was originally Cutter. And then I think it was either my sergeant or his fosterers that changed it to Finn. Right. So he was Cutter to begin with, but I think Finn was...
Because it's risky business. I suppose the force actually named them. So it's not going to be like Tinkerbell. It's a tea litter. They've been busy and you've had a lot of recruitment. Because that is... I've always said I will never, even if it's a rabbit, allow my children to name the pets. Because at some point, the parents look after it. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I'm going to have to shout for... I did have two chickens, actually, called Fluffy and Buffy. And, yeah, that was bad enough, to be honest. But yeah, shall we bring...
I think we should. He's been in the green room for a long time. He's eating all the peanuts.
I'm gonna say no. I'm not coming on yet. Hangs out. So Mike Panett is actually he joined the Met in 1988, and he dealt with riots, drug gangs. He's done armed robberies. Not he's done them, but he's nicked the blackguards that have done it all. He then in 1997 he went to his home counties of North Yorkshire, and had a bit of a surprise because he was actually born. When I looked him up, I thought it said born near New York, and I thought, wow, there's a story he hasn't told us. But it's born near York is what it is. That's what these are for. And then he resigned. Interesting. In 2007. And started writing books. But I want to ask him a little bit about what he did when he left and that side of things. But he's an author of 8 books, which we're going to go into, and he's also producer, director, that side of things. And more than anything, he looks like a big mug of tea. You are on, Michael. How are you? How are you? Oh, there we are. Oh, not that one. Not that one. I'm going to bring. There's him. There's him. And I'm going to get rid of that
so
one.
Many,
that's it.
So many.
There we go. There we go. Hey, right. That was smooth. That was Mike. Welcome, my friend. Welcome.
Brilliant.
I want to know, is that a green screen you got behind you?
Good to be on with you, boys.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you, buddy.
Yeah. I tell you what, I've just been in the green room and they're serving Yorkshire tea, biscuits. And apparently, if I can survive half an hour, get gin and tonic.
It's good in the green room. I do thoroughly recommend Dave and Harry's green room. It's fantastic, you know.
But is it because the latest thing you've done, mate? You're a Yorkshireman through and through, aren't you? And the books you write are described as think 21st century Heartbeat meets James Herriot with the occasional white knuckle ride of the Sweeney. Thrown in for good measure, isn't it? And I mean, you're phenomenal. You've been nominated for the People's Book 2016 and so on and so forth, haven't you? So but what other stuff are you doing at the moment?
It's been absolutely fantastic, and you know, what a great editor, and you know, there's so many stories to how we went about getting the publishing deal, but no, I had sort of 8 fantastic years of writing books, as you know, having done 20 years in the police. And I think it was always about, all my books have always been true accounts, that, you know, it's not fiction, it's as it's happened, you know, warts and all. And I think the great thing, my cousin, Peter Walker, had books, the original ones, you know, Constable on the Hill, Constable Cannon, and it kind of gave me the idea when I transferred back from London. It was, you know, I was doing it and living it for real, and I was actually policing the area which the books depicted, so it seemed quite a good idea to bring it all up to speed. So
yeah,
fantastic years. But of course then I had to sort of look to what I was going to do. So I've worked in television now for about 3 or 4 years, which is fantastic, really exciting.
And I know you, and you're hectic, because I speak to you most days, to be honest, a lot of those, don't I? And certainly on, because we tell people that they must know, because they must message each other, but we have sort of rooms out there with different groups of people that We can discuss things, yeah. And Mike is really really big on it. And what's really interesting about it is the contacts. I mean, I thought I had reasonable contacts, but Mike's got phenomenal contacts. Dave as well. And between us, it's quite incredible who you something comes up in the media and you say, okay, well, how close to the truth is this? And it's amazing how you could soon speak to someone who is in that county or in that town or in that department even. And we're able to update us on what actually is. So we know the right angle to go with. So you're doing that. You're writing, you're in your sort of TV stuff at the moment because you did the documentaries, didn't you, with Ross Kemp with the ARVs some time back?
Yeah, armed policing. That was one. We're working on a couple more at the moment. We've had to put filming on hold because of the old coronavirus.
Yeah.
So we've got a very exciting series due to be released. We've not been sat, you know, I'm being lucky. I've kept working for it's all the planning side of stuff now. So we're planning a couple of factuals, which is going to be really impactive on policing, which is going to look at areas, you know, that I think need to be looked at. And I don't want to give too much away, but it's looking really good. We're going to do something, you know, right across the board on welfare and quite a serious side. But then the other flip of the coin is it's fantastic. I'm working now exclusively with Qdos, the drama people. So if you think Ashes to Ashes, Life on Mars, sort of stuff, Gunpowder, it's just phenomenal. They're probably one of the best drama makers in the world. We've got a great show at the moment on Channel 4 called Code 404, which is going down well.
Yeah.
But things like Broadchurch, Apple Tree Yard. So it's really exciting that I can now look to sort of create something new going forward.
Can you tell us what your role is in all that? Are you the fixer, as it were? What's your role in all that?
Yeah. Sort of
It's quite interesting. It's quite a unique position. It's one Qdos have seen a couple of. I work with another retired cop, and I've done for about 5 or 6 years on television, and between us, we've come up with two really good concepts, which they've taken up. So that's gone into development, which is going to be so exciting. It's just a chance in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's basically I think they brand us as their exclusive police consultants, but it's much more than that. We get involved in writing up stuff. We get involved in speaking to the screenwriters. I mean, you know, you don't get any bigger than and Stephen Knight. He's just finished doing Peaky Blinders.
Oh, wow.
And he's working on one of our projects now, which is going to be rolled out, you know, 2021, called SAS Rogue Heroes.
The bonus thing is as well, because I know when these companies are trying to get places, is speak to people like you that can hopefully get a little bit more access because the people you know and that side of things. So that's what I'm finding. I mean, our dispatches recently get into a force that they were struggling a little bit. And it's just, if you know people, it makes it much easier, you know, that you can trust people and that side of things. So, but I mean, so going into your, I just wanted to mention, first of all, though, because there's your one book at the moment that seems to be really kicking out at the moment is this one here, Mike, Crime Squad. And that, in your London days, what was your involvement in London? What was, how long were you there for again? It was 88 to 97, wasn't it?
It's 10 years roughly. And Crime Squad is another true story. It was basically a friend of mine, Patrick Dunn, bless his corn socks, police officer. He was like the gentle giant. He was a Clapham-based officer. He was gunned down, you know, shot dead in cold blood by what the media at the time described as the most brutal man ever to walk the streets of Britain, a really nasty individual called Gary Nelson. He was ruthless, and he'd had an altercation roughly at this guy with a drug dealer and a fallout at a nightclub. He went round and with another individual and executed him in Clapham, but poor Pat was round the corner dealing with a call. And of course, when these guys have gone walking off, he's heard the gunshots ringing out, gone outside, and unfortunately they've shot him on the doorstep as they walked past and then ran off laughing. So I was fortunate that I was doing some work on this individual, and to cut a long story short, I knew quite a lot about him. And I remember watching it at home on the news at 10, a police officer murdered, and they gave a partial registration number. And because I'd been, you know, working on it, I knew straight away who that vehicle belonged to, rang up the incident room, and I spent the next year on the murder squad trying to...
It's interesting as well, because people think about it, it's just about nowadays that people are just walking around shooting people dead and stabbing all the murders, those horrendous murders, especially happening in the cities. And but they were occasionally happening before, weren't they? There were some real, real nasty gangs and crime leaders back then.
It was
there,
the Yardie scene, Harry.
Yeah.
It was the Yardie scene. It was the Americans' influence coming in.
And they were really ruthless, weren't they? The Yardies were completely and utterly ruthless. They were.
I mean, it was the 80s and 90s. It was more of a rival gangs, but instead of using knives then, what we see sadly now, it was all guns. Yeah. And, you know, I know quite a few police officers that have got in the way. I mean, my first raid I ever did with my Welcome to Battersea, North Yorkshire country lad, arriving in London. My first raid, I ended up going in and staring down the barrels of a loaded sawn-off shotgun. And I thought, I remember just putting my hands up and saying, hey, you know, I'm police, you know. I thought we were just doing a normal raid. And there he is.
We'd have had an empty square down there,
by another gang, and he didn't shoot me and threw it out of the window.
Harry and I are County Mounties.
Go on.
I was just saying that we're County Mounties.
Yeah,
so
going back to
get
original...
to read about this sort of thing.
Go on, mate.
Yeah, just going back to what you were saying, Harry, about social media and how us three have become really good friends and stuff. I think, you know, I joined Twitter in 2011, around just before the time of the London riots and everywhere else. But that network that you and Dave have successfully grown on. I mean, both of you two won the Twitter Awards when it was really successful, and I was delighted about that. But the network and hearing about stuff fast time, I suppose it sends, you know, it you can find out what's going on quicker than any news outlet.
Totally.
And I think that's our beauty.
I think they
play a strong role in influencing some of the media as well.
Dave, do you find that, because I found the national media, I knew I'd be very wary with, and they nearly had me over. I think if I'd been in any other force, the bridge thing, the force would have bounced back and said, "Oh, shut his account. It's caused mayhem. It's front page on online that one we shall not mention," sort of thing. But but. The local papers, I find, are really, because they don't want to lose you. So they're actually far more. So, you know, if I stick a picture of me with a sheep that I've recovered from the main road, they will keep you. And so that's really important. But it's having to deal with the media on that side. I find that at one point we thought that the media found it almost it's interesting how they've tackled the internet, because they could find it as an, and they just like policing, they've had to change with it all. Because people were finding out, just like Mike was saying, they were finding out the stuff themselves. Us three now, we just go into, I call it the dark web of Twitter. It's just the back rooms where I go, "Oh, Mike, what do you know about this?" He says, "Oh, that's Dave knows something about it. He was mentioning it. I'll come back to you," and that side of things. I mean, everyone does it.
We saw a fantastic example of that, and I'm going to have to try and find it now, of the Met, I think he's a borough commander, putting people to rights about an incident. Was it yesterday? Absolutely fantastic use of social media.
Oh, you know, people brilliant.
Calling these cops out and saying that what they were doing was disgraceful. And this senior officer said, "Well, hang on. I have privy to all the facts that are available to me at the moment. And I can tell you that it didn't happen like that. It happened... as far as we're aware, it happened this way, and these were the circumstances." And
brilliant.
Brilliant. You can see that.
And you know, and I remember the Twitter Awards that we, because I went to LA to do a conference thing, and the Boston chief said there, he was, they'd had a shooting in Boston brilliant accent. Wish I could do it. I mean, hard as nails.
Boston.
And Boston with a W. Boston. Yeah. Sorry, like that. And he says he was, because he was in the plane, he was on the Wi-Fi and the internet, and he got that there was a, had been a shooting. He then prepared, spoke to the guys on the ground sort of thing, and as, before he'd landed, he'd done a police spokesperson, the Boston, you know, to say, right, this is happening. However, we're not looking for anyone else. It's contained. It was between two individuals, and so people could then feel safer and all that. That's where social media is incredible and isn't used enough, I think, by police forces. Some Northampton's particularly good, isn't he?
Yeah. Nick Adley.
And he got a slamming recently because he was misquoted. And unfortunately, that's the danger, is take something out of context and then before you know it, it's like wildfire. We can pour a bit of water on that, can't we, to a certain extent?
Yeah, look, people are going to have a go at you no matter what you do, whether you stand still, whether you do something. There's the old saying, isn't there? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Foxtrot Cop has just put his name up, Raj Kohli. Yeah, you know, absolutely fantastic top cop in the Met who's really, really embracing social media. So, to see what he did.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Dave. I think there's one thing that I often see and find, and you'll probably bear this out, is the police service tends to be reactive to bad news stories instead of going on the front foot. And I think police officers get paid a lot of money, but by and large, the majority of police officers who have their own accounts, the human side of policing, that's what the public want. And I think by and large, we often, you know, there's that balance between corporate comms and the real sort of as it is on the ground from the cops themselves that the public really buy into.
Yeah,
and I think there's the corporate communication side has a really important role, but that's delivering key messages. But like we've just talked about, if you get on the front foot and explain things to the public, that's what people buy into. And I think we see in so many, for every force seems to be different. Some forces are better than others.
Yeah.
Some chief constables seem to have the confidence in the staff to allow them to run accounts and be really, you know, that's why you two guy won the awards because you were open and you were really out there and you were, you know, you explained things really, really well. And I think that's what the public really like about our police service.
I think it's really important that I find it easy because I'm just honest. And if you're honest and it's embarrassing, go with it, because then you don't have to put an act on. And you don't have to think what you said last time. And so you just get what you get is what you get. And I think it's just a best way to go on social media. I was having a bit of a professional spat, shall we say, with Pippa. I forget her surname, do apologise. But Pippa is the one that rings out, the deputy chief of Essex. And because they're shall we say, culling a few of their accounts. They won't like that word. Their view is that it was confusing the public with so many. And I'm like saying, no, because the genuine problem out there, guys, is corporate comms. Oops, someone's gone, and that wasn't me. We've lost Dave, so we'll see if he comes back in a minute. I didn't touch anything, honestly.
Well, we always wanted it to be Harry and Mike, didn't we?
Yeah.
We always wanted
took
Harry
a while.
And Mike, Harry.
Took a while. Here we go. He's back. He's back in.
Sorry.
He's back in the room. But no, they were saying it confuses the public, so many accounts and that side of things. And I think what the problem, genuine problem is, corporate comms is only so big with so many staff. And what they don't want is have a massive corporate comms, because if they can thin that down, they can get more cops on the street. And that's what it's all about. So if you have good news coming in or bad news coming in about any accounts, that creates more work for corporate comms. And so corporate comms, most of them, if not all, are civilians and work very hard doing what they're doing. But I think they've got a very specific role. And I think my personal view is the chief and the debt want to drive their force forward. And with corporate comms, a lot of them, I'm not saying this about Essex because I'm not in there and I can't say. And as far as I'm aware, they're really good bosses there. But the problem is corporate comms are not going to say, yes, let's have more of these accounts, because it's going to create more work. They're not on commission and they're probably struggling coping with the press that they've got at the moment. And then, of course, you have the odd hiccup with an officer who says, well, I've had thousands of them. And, you know, that causes more work for them as well. So the temptation is to get rid of some of them, all of them. But you need a corporate approach, you need it. You need the departmental approach, but you need that individuals as well, don't you?
Yeah. I think people like Nick Ardley.
Localism.
Yeah.
Yeah. People like Nick Ardley and Dee Collins, when she was chief constable, I think they hit it perfectly. And I think if they can use that as a model, I think we'll be halfway there.
You're absolutely right, Dave. You're absolutely right. And out of those officers, the majority of officers, and I think this is what we've done over the years, and it's an absolute fact that a group of officers, yes, we don't represent everybody, but between us and our wider circle, our wider network, we pretty much know who's doing what, etc. If we see somebody who's going a little bit being silly or has said something, we'll support them and we'll guide them. We don't just cast them aside because they're doing it for the right intentions. And I think rather than, you know, you're right about Dee Collins, Dave, and Nick Adlers, and there's a few others. One thing we lack is consistency in the country. So you can have brilliant work being done. And look at the engagement in West Yorkshire. I mean, I'll say West Yorkshire in particular. There's some other individuals around the country which do fantastic jobs. But West Yorkshire, a few other forces, their engagement with the local community, your local community officer for a borough, say, that's who they want to hear from.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got to put a shout out here. Sean Sawyer, my ex-chief, and Paul Netherton. They don't do an awful lot. Paul Netherton does, the debt puts a fair bit on Twitter. But Sean Sawyer's not the one, he doesn't put a load on Twitter at all, but boy, does he support it. And he once said to me, that's right, he had a meeting of top corridor so that he could have someone from each department could come in and ask questions. And they were very honest with answers, I've got to say. And he said, oh, Harry, we could do with 10 of you in this force. And I said, sir, I think I could only cope with one. So there are, I bet there's some chiefs out there who are supporting like mad. And I think some chiefs are probably, they're not into social media. They've got other things, and that's nothing wrong with that. And of course, they're being led then by corporate comms, and it will depend entirely what they're like and what their staffing is like to how much they will encourage it, shall we say, or not.
But if you think back what we used to do as sergeant, you know, we had a fantastic relationship before social media with the local press. And of course, they'd come in and see me in rural North Yorkshire. I'd sit them down with a cup of tea, go through everything that's happened. Sometimes I made mistakes. I mean, I remember getting called up into the chief superintendent's office because the headline of the paper read, local sergeant said that anybody coming into North Yorkshire pillaging and plundering were going to absolutely cop for it. And that's how I felt. But of course, the headline looks pretty like we're going to bash the crap out of you if you arrive in North Yorkshire. So everybody makes mistakes, but we had a great relationship with the local press. But I think now we kind of don't have that as well as much as we should.
Yeah. I remember being in Dawlish and ringing the press up. All the cops didn't. I said, no, let's tell them the good news. Because only, you know, so they would call and they would call up every day, what's going on. And I'd try to, you know, give them and they're like, oh, wow. You know, as other cops would just, oh, no, nothing today sort of thing. It's just so
I used to be a neighbourhood cop and I used to have a great relationship with my local press. The newspaper here in East Harts has been absolutely fantastic for Finn and Finn's Law. But what you just said just then, Mike, reminds me of a story a friend of mine shared with me this week. He's a deputy sheriff in Brevard County and his sheriff was stood today this week was stood outside the house of like a crack den having an interview and doing social media at the same time, pointing at this house saying,
oh, I saw that, yeah, yeah,
scumbags live in that house and we are going to target you and everybody who comes to you until you leave this town. It was brilliant. So I'm not saying we need to go that far, but it was an absolutely incredible use of social media. And he left them under no illusion what was going to happen.
I think it's fair to say, just on the social, you know, final bit on the social media bit for me, my point is, I think it's fair to say that we can also, that the people that are passionate on social media care hugely about policing. And for example, when we were going through these terrible times of Theresa May and David Cameron, being honest, cutting the police, the one thing that we knew as cops, the one thing we didn't want to get rid of was our police dogs.
Yeah.
And they would cut in them some 50% reductions here, 40% here. Some areas were talking about getting rid of them altogether. I was there at the time when they said that, and I remember bashing my hand down on the desk and walking out. But we ran a campaign which, if you couldn't get as big, we ran Don't Ditch the Dogs. I think everybody who cared about policing got in. And following the analytics on that, within the first 12 hours that had been seen, that hashtag, because we were all pretty worried about what was going on. And for the very right reasons, and we've been borne out, we ran Don't Ditch the Dogs. That went to 19 million timelines in under 12 hours.
Absolutely, and of course, incredible.
Similar with
massively, and thankfully some chiefs now are rebuilding the forces.
Similar with Breeze for Blues, wasn't it? When the press was snapping cops having a coffee somewhere, and now it's turned it on its head. And I'm sure Breeze for Blues was, and there's a big support. I also think, do you know what, with the social media, is that some chiefs or command team of forces see what's happening with social media, see that the feeling has changed. Don't just take it from the press, because it used to, they'd listen to the press, see an officer getting slammed because of this, and then they've gone, yes, this is terrible, you know, it's been investigated and that's it. And unfortunately it still goes on to a certain extent. But if they see the social media to say, well, what's wrong with them having a drink? Well, there's no canteens and this, that and the other, Breeze for Blues, da da da. And then the next time round, I think command teams are far quicker to come out and saying, yeah, I'm happy to buy a cup of tea next time I see them, sort of thing. And it really can change it. I think social media on that side of things has really improved. Just getting a full picture.
Just allows us to have our say, which we've never, well, until social media, we could never do. So think back to your early careers and even my early career, you couldn't have a say. You did as you were told and you couldn't have a say. But now we get to, and that's, and I do think that is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, look. So I know we're putting quite a few of this. Foxtrot Cop. He says our chief wants to buy more horses too, which is brilliant.
And
blimey. So I'd love to have a.
Well,
yeah, that's impressive, isn't it? The old chief.
Look what happened there. We had to run a separate campaign about our mounted section as well, and we lost so many of them. But it's like this pandemic, you know. The planning teams for the pandemic, and my wife, God bless her, was 31 years in the police service, and she was sort of head of planning for one of the forces. And all that they had talked about was planning for a pandemic. And you can see what's happened with the virus. We weren't prepared. We didn't have enough PPE. And I kind of think between us, all we know is that should the wheel come off, what are your most effective assets? And we know that dogs in London, when they cleared boroughs on the long lead, were fantastic.
Yeah.
And then mounted as well. They've all got a role to play. And it's all very well sat on a piece of paper saying, well, what are we going to do? You know, and I tell you what, if we ended up, God forbid, another sort of riot, there's nothing better than having your dogs to
and
your mounted.
And dogs and horses. I put this
it's
one on.
Having that vision, it's okay short term, making cuts.
Well, and then suddenly you decide you need them, and it's too late. And now you have the training process and bringing them back. It's not a click of the button. And I think what Newquay is saying, John, I believe it is one huge problem for media, especially online papers, is that they have to please advertisers by producing clickbait and putting spin on most stories. We all see that, and we all know why they do it. They've got to get a. You know, the headline has got to be, you know, cops are going to search your basket in aisle 13 type thing. Where inside it actually says, well, no, it's only if people are consistently driving for, you, this was when there was more clampdown, wasn't it? Mm. And of course we were stopping cars then, and they're like, yeah, I'm getting essential food sort of thing. And then they buy a plant pot. Well, unless they're really that vegetarian and they have an attraction of yucca plants to eat, then, you know, we knew they were just putting a new, or they got a planter for their garden. So that's really basically what it meant. But it is, it's the clickbait, it's the issue. And then that's the whole thing of British prey. I just wish general population were a bit more wise to it, because it's amazing who do believe what they read in the headlines still. It's like, yeah. What?
Yeah, you see some of the comments and you sort of do raise your eyebrows. But again, I think it comes back to people having that personal touch with police, because you get so many comments now. And of course, you know, we're very good at replying and saying, well, actually, that probably isn't the way it happened, and they are allowed to do that and they can't do that. And I think we're just hopefully helping to bring down those barriers, and people are getting a much better understanding, and that comes with direct contact.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And I think somebody said to me, so what are you going to do when you leave? You'll be able to do this, that, and the other. And do you know what? I've said things now that I would have got at least 5 complaints for, but no one bats an eyelid, because there are people out there who think the police service should still be in their tunics, standing to attention, wooden truncheon and a paper pocket notebook, and not really, you know, they've got their own opinion. You know, they think that if they should ask them to make them a cup of coffee, they should, because they're their servant, which is entirely wrong. And so those are the sorts of people who complain, and you have to deal with those in the same way as if you told someone to F off down the street in full uniform when you were in full uniform. It's ridiculous. They need to change that. They need to change that. But it is a nice reading.
The other thing, Harry, as well, is,
go on.
The great thing is, Harry, just going back to some, you know, somebody who just posted there, I was reading it, that, you know, the public really want to know what's going on. And yes, you would never give away, you know, I was never one for saying, well, do you know that, you know, there's only one police officer working this area. I never liked that, because you were giving the upper hand.
Yeah.
To the criminal.
No, I never did that. Yeah.
Actually having a voice and being part of the community. That's what British policing is about, is being part of that community. And cops are as passionate about safeguarding that community as anybody could ever imagine. And don't forget, throughout all of the negative publicity our police service has had over 12 years, and thankfully now things are slowly starting to improve, the public, with a clickbait like you mentioned, the public still have massive confidence in our policing. Some 70-80% still trust our police. And that's what I say about trusting your cops on the ground to deliver some good messages, as long as you're not being stupid. But you cannot take away that link to the public.
But you'll have the problem where people just look at the social media, see the negative stuff. So they assume that 70% of the public don't like the police, don't trust the police. Genuinely, I'm talking to some people, and I think, do you know what? I can't invest the time in you. You genuinely think that everyone hates the police. It's just not the case. But when you read that, if you're a police officer and you read that constantly, it does put people down when they...
I must say, and I know you guys would have done as well, and this is on a national scale, not just locally, I have met some incredible journalists. You know, I can think of people at the Mirror who have been fantastic for our story and Finn's Law. And with the new Finn's Law Part 2, and there's a guy at the Express. Was it the Express that serialised your book, Harry? It was Matt Nixon.
Daily Express. Yeah, they did. They didn't serialise. So they did double spread. A really good job.
Nixon at the Express is absolutely top notch. I don't think that we're passing the press, because some of them are absolutely...
I could not agree more, Dave. There's some very good people in the Daily Mail. There's some good people in the BBC. Those people actually want to get the right message out, but sometimes headline grabbing sort of scours it. All the good work sort of is down here, and the single headline is up here. So I think you
are
absolutely
more intelligent.
Right.
It takes more intelligent journalism to make something exciting from the start with an article. It's very easy to just get a an average story and then put an outrageous, you know, title on the top of it, isn't it, really? But there you go. Somebody agrees with you, Mike. But you're not going to agree with her cup of tea, though, are you? What about her cup of tea, though? What do you think about that? So I'll tell you what, Mike, just for that, I'm going to bring that one up for you, Mike. And I'm going to get rid of... I'm sorry, Gabby. That's it.
Oh.
There we go. So it's all about...
Oh, Yorkshire tea, Harry.
Are you the ambassador, Mike? Are you the ambassador for Yorkshire tea? Or have you or in your vein?
I'm proud to say, Dave, that Yorkshire tea have... They sponsored my books and, you know, I'm proud that I was made... Two things. My proudest moment was being made a patron of Yorkshire by the tourist board off the back of my books. I couldn't believe it. It was better than getting knighted. And then to become Yorkshire Tea's ambassador, well, yeah. I mean, as a Yorkshireman who drinks countless supplies of tea, but to be fair to Yorkshire Tea, I mean, just as a one-off example, we saw after the 2011 riots... The cops had a very, very difficult time, especially in the Metropolitan Police. There was a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
The leadership was a bit all over the place. But between Yorkshire Tea and the Police Federation, the Met Federation down in London, we shipped down 27,000 boxes of Yorkshire Tea, complimentary, so every cop could get a box of Yorkshire Tea to say, well done in the riots. You did your best. Have a cup of tea. And yeah. I tell you what, morale was boosted. And I think we all know about morale and what we need to do to boost morale. And I think seeing a few senior cops come out sometimes and saying, well done. Yeah. Yeah. Great job. These are my officers doing it. Exactly. That's what it's all about. And that,
you know,
totally.
And it is so, I always say we'll always be a hero for a week because there would be some terrorism attack. The police acted brilliantly. Everyone loves a cop. Cops are great. And you know, it lasts about 7 days before there's a headline. And then, cops are always. And I remember talking to somebody in London who was on a section and he spoke to me and he was just gutted. He says, I go out there and I wonder why now, because they have no idea what we're doing, what we put up with. We're the worst of the worst as far as they're concerned. And do you know what? A week later, he said, oh, Harry, take it all back now. Everything's fine again. Just speak to a few nice people. And it brought him and the section, because he said the section were the same. It just brings their morale up again. And actually, you can enjoy coming to work again and thinking you're making a difference, as they say, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to remember in our job as well that sometimes we only ever see the negative. And then when you turn to social media and that's all negative as well. And you have to remember that the silent majority really are that. They are the majority. 78%, like Mike said, you know, they absolutely love their police. They love that we police by consent and they're there and they support us day in, day out. And of course, social media gives them a voice as well. So if they see a negative story, they are brilliant now at jumping on it and saying, well, hang on, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're commenting on. So, yeah, absolutely wonderful. Mike, send some Yorkshire tea down to BCH Dog Handlers. We love a cup of tea. Cup of tea solves everything. Cup of tea solves everything.
I must have dished out. I'm not being funny. At one point, Yorkshire tea, what mine is. At one point, I had 50,000 boxes of tea in a hidden location for the distribution. That Yorkshire tea has gone to Scotland, everywhere.
Was it like the Christmas Coca-Cola truck, but it was the Mike Panic Yorkshire tea truck?
It was phenomenal. And I must admit, in my heyday, when I had a few couple of quid to rub together, you know, Yorkshire Tea were very good at shipping stuff, but sometimes I'd get requests, and I won't go into all the details, but I'd get a box which had 150 in, and it was costing me 20, 30 quid. But you know what? The pleasure I got about knowing that a bit of Yorkshire was going to, you know, down into Devon especially, really, really was fantastic.
I got that on tape.
Police car.
That's recorded, Dave, that Mike put his hand in his pocket. And
Yorkshire man, put his hand in his pocket, never.
There's some great comments there. And then Julia, admitted that she'd never tried Yorkshire tea, but she's going to go out and get some now. I don't know why. We're not, Dave, you're getting anything for Yorkshire tea. You see, you know my love of Fortnum & Mason's loose tea, Countess Grey.
Yeah.
And I'm slightly shaky at the moment because I've had to go to the Fortnum & Mason loose tea Earl Grey. I don't think I'm ever going to be an ambassador of Fortnum & Mason somehow. I don't quite think I meet their clique as such, but although I do have look, there's the TV box and there's the Fortnum & Mason's thing, my hamper.
Yeah, pay
my
to
house
you.
My house is a mess. There are just boxes. The laptop I've just got is new. That's what you happen when you retire and you set up a new business, really, isn't it? But lots of boxes everywhere.
I remember another one which was really, really good. While we're just on about people that support you, I mean, another one which was, I don't know how it came, well, I do know how it came about, but when Black Sheep Brewery got in touch and said, Mike, you know, do you mind if we do a little bit of work with you and sponsorship? I'll tell you what, I had a few crates of, I thought I was going to turn into an alcoholic on Black Sheep beer at one point. So I managed to distribute some of that out.
Nice. I'll always have some of that if you do, for sure. Quick shout out to Simon Tromans and his wife Michelle, who God bless his soul, used to have the lovely RPD Logan. Now got the RPD Ivor. Hello, thank you for your posts on your supportive post on social media this week. Thanks for that. Yes, it's going.
This is an interesting, because you always find the military are very similar to police on the side of things, especially going with the flows of the governments, whether it's cutbacks, how they're treated and that side of things. But there we go. From Michael Bullock. Harry, I'm an ex-soldier, and your comment regarding why did we do the job rings true. I've old comrades who look at the country today and say, was it worth it? I think we can feel a bit battered, but then the Americans are very good at recognising their service personnel, aren't they? They're very good. I was in America, right, and I'm like, oh, this is like, it just isn't the British way, you know, and you had the 24-year-old veteran, you know, who did a couple of years, and you've got the 90-year-old veteran, and they're all standing up together, and everyone's, you know, and it's amazing.
Well, I love it out there. You know, they have a massive national week, I think it is, the policing week out there. You know, when they lose a cop, the you know, the way they do it is incredible.
Yeah.
When they use the police dog, my goodness, they have, you know, lines of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cops lining the street to say thank you to the dog, because they know that the dog has probably saved, you know, a few of their lives. So I do like the way. I know some people think it's a bit OTT, but I love the way they recognise their service personnel and their cops out there. It's fantastic.
And Mike, there's a technical question. Are you ready for a technical question? I think the answer is going to be yes. But
yeah,
Mr. P, I think it's meant to be.
Don't ask me why they do decaf, and they do you know, if you've got hard water. So a lot of the boxes I had to send down south had to be the green hard water boxes. But yes, we do breakfast tea, we do biscuit tea. I mean, my cupboard is full. I mean, it's fantastic.
So just in case they haven't been advertised enough with this.
There we go.
Just get rid of, so you can be seen. But there we go on that. Guys, I'm just going to ask any more questions that are coming through. Let's see what's coming up. So, Rowena Puppy Walked Logan. I just stuck that on. The US, sometimes you click on the one below and it comes.
Yeah, I didn't know you were ex-military, Mike. What did you do? Or is it hush hush? Is it top secret?
Yeah, go on. Well done, Dave.
No, it was a bit. I mean, in a nutshell, my brother.
You were a blanket folder.
Phil, he's still at sea. He's still at sea. He went off to the Falklands War, and as a very young man, he was a junior officer on HMS Bayleaf and HMS Orange Leaf. One got sunk and they had to move them off. But I thought, hang on a minute, as a young man then, I was only 18 and I was working full time on a farm with family and things like that. So I joined the Territorial Army and went on to specialise with signals. And my claim to fame, I was got the best recruit out of 180 people, and it was I was always for backing up people. And I kind of think I spent 6 years in the TA, travelled all over, specialised the last 3 years in stuff that was fantastic. And then it naturally, because I left school with two honours. I mean, the first was in the study of motorbikes and the second was in the study of girls. Yeah. So I think...
Which you are still
a professional. My track record of working in within the TA that got me into the police service.
But I think you're being, I think Mike's being very modest about
it. It was fantastic,
and you're being very modest about your military, but we won't go any further with that. But no, it's that's good stuff. What I was going to say, left me, it's going to come back to me, I'm sure. But yeah, I just put something up there about the Rosemary saying, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for a month every year for 12 years in
the
US.
Absolutely spot on.
Total respect. And they're not ashamed to show it, which the British are.
I know you did an attachment when you were in LA, and I spent some time with Miami-Dade and Brevard County and a couple of other sheriff's departments when I was in Florida. And they're absolutely incredible. And what, you know, you were a firearms officer. You've been to a lot of incredible jobs as well, Mike, and so have I. But every job they go to in America, every job is a firearms job. Every job, they may lose their life.
People always say to us, oh, yeah, we wish you had your police. You seem to be really... Nah, policing over there is different. Well,
Floridan cop friends, they don't understand how I can put the uniform on and not carry a gun. They wouldn't do it.
No.
They would not do my job. Even when you try and explain to them that it is slightly different over here, they would not do my job, your job, without a gun.
Mike, I think Mick is suggesting that you can do a joint degree now in what you've just said. Oh, it's not that one. It's the other one. He's all over the place there. What about that one? Is wrong. Yeah. Is this slowly to push?
Mike,
come on, girls. We want some comeback from the women watching at the moment. I think this is... we need to even this up a bit.
But Mike, are there any plans? Tony's just asked, are there any more plans for any other books?
Good question.
I think I've got one more up my sleeve, but to be honest with you, it's the time factor. I sort of spent, and Harry will bear me out here, I spent 8 years literally, you know, on with 8 books, and it takes a whole chunk of your life out. And I think I've got so much work with the television side of things now and the drama, which is a chance in a lifetime. I think once I've got to where I need to get with them, there might be one more, which would be quite exciting. So I've got that plan, but it's probably likely to be 2 or 3 years yet at least before I do it, my swan song book, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they are phenomenal, and people have got to they've got to read them, because the brand was brilliant. I loved the brand that you basically. I'm just going to get it here. Let's just bring it up a bit, see if I can find it. Because I love the titles and just the picture. I tell you, because John Nicol has got a great brand as well with the Spitfire and Lancaster and that side of things. Just beautiful, beautiful books. Okay, here we go. This might work, guys. Again, seamless. I got my production team. You work a bit harder, please. Get things going. But you see, just the artist.
Then, lad.
You use the same illustrator for all those, Mike.
To be honest with you, Yorkshire Tea were quite happy, because Now Then, Lad, I mean, that was fantastic. We had an artist, but the second and third, fourth, we had Radio 4 Book of the Week, which, you know, it's going back, you know, 2009. So it's 10 years, 11 years ago. But we had Yorkshire Tea the dramatised "You Come In With Me, Lad," and we used the voiceover of the Yorkshire Tea advert guy who helped with Radio 4. And
wow,
it was just fantastic. But they helped with a little bit of design, so it's, I've been incredibly lucky to have had such fantastic support. I mean, it seems a lifetime ago now, but at the time, it meant I was doing TV interviews, radio interviews about it all, and it was, you know, the Daily Mail, like you said, they serialised Now Then Lad for 3 days, the 4 pages a day, and I was like, my mother knocked on the door and says, "Oh, it was a Saturday, 18th of August, 2008, the days that changed your life, really."
Yeah.
And they opened the thing and it said, "It shouldn't happen to a cop," and it ran and ran, and it was
brilliant.
A really exciting time, but really, really lucky as well. It's all about being in the right place, the right time. So tremendous amount of support and a tremendous amount of luck. But then again, you two boys, to be fair to you, I mean, Dave, you know, Sunday Times, Top 10, is a remarkable achievement. And Harry, you've been best-selling just recently. Phenomenal interest. And, you know, I'm just as proud to sort of see you guys doing well now as I was originally.
Well, you've done, Mike, you've been incredible support and advice for me. Absolutely brilliant. It's been like having my own agent, because I am self-published, because that was the issue. And I could understand why there was no publisher who was immediately wanted to take me on. But so, Mike, a personal thanks for me. Dave, I'm going to let you sign off and thank Mike.
Mike was fantastic. With, you know, Fabulous Finn wouldn't have happened without Mike's input. You know, he's a top guy, and I'm just thankful that he's out there. And now you, Harry, as well, although you've been very vocal on social media, even before retirement, but the fact that the two of you are out there supporting us and sticking up for us, and you're talking from not only a standpoint of your own history and your own knowledge, but you make sure that you keep up to date with what's happening out there today. So I do take my hat off, and I'm sure lots of people will join me in taking my hat off to Mike. Thank you ever so much, and I hope we are friends for a very long time.
Mike, are your books true stories? Quick, yes or no? Yes, they are. Thank you very much. Everyone out there, thank you so much. Yes, that's it from me. That's it from them. And it's been emotional. Thanks, Mike, for turning up. Love you loads, buddy, and we'll catch you again. Oh, next week, Saturday.
Oh.
Are you, go on, Dave. Are you
going to
say who's on next week or not?
No? I can't show. Let me see if I can find. Have you got his other book to hand? Because we're not allowed to show the other book.
No. I've got. Okay. Hang on. I have.
Okay. I'll talk about our next guest. Sorry to talk about our next guest while Mike is still there. But Mike knows this guy as well. And he's an absolute legend. Just like Mike.
All right. Here we go.
Fantastic police supporter. Next week we have the one and only John Nicol as a guest. He'll be talking about his his amazing career. For anybody who doesn't know, he was a navigator in the Gulf War, and his Tornado was shot down. He and the pilot were taken prisoner of war. And they wrote a book about that, which I think sold something crazy like 10 million copies or something bonkers like that, which I could never even dream of doing. But he's going to be talking about his new book, which we can't show you, but it was delivered today. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book, which is why I asked you about the front cover of your books, Mike. He was talking to me the other day about his illustrator and the beautiful work they do. And your books are beautifully illustrated as well. So next week, fantastic guest, John Nicol. But a massive thank you to Mike Panett for joining us today.
Yes.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for listening in as well.
Good luck.
Cheers.